Good evening, friends. As was announced, the title of the talk is Truth in All Faiths. It will at once arise in the minds of the students, particularly those who are familiar with theosophy, to know that this forms the second object, that is, search for truth. Not for truth, but search for truth in all faiths. That is, seems to be the second object of the theosophical movement. And although that object has been translated in various ways, one of the very simplest way in which it is translated is given here behind this Theosophical Movement magazine. Here there are three objects, the first being to form the nucleus of universal brotherhood of humanity. And to solve that purpose of bringing about that nucleus, we require understanding world religions. Not only to understand, but to bring about some kind of brotherhood among religions itself. So for that, the object of the Theosophical Movement at that time and still is, the most important of them all, is the study of ancient and modern religions, philosophies, and sciences, and the demonstration of the importance of study, such study. So we shall today see the importance of that, this subject of trying to decipher the common denominator within all world religions. It is something that we have to discover, it is something that we have to make effort to search for. That is, by making comparative study of religions, and in so doing, try to discover a kind of common thread and common essence which runs through them all. Now, that's a very stupendous study. Within one lifetime, you cannot even study the creed to which you belong. It's not impossible. It's almost impossible to study all the religions simultaneously. But essential truths, they are easily being given out, and they are the highlights of religion. They are this starry aspect of the religion, which we shall soon see. Because after all, they form the very core of world religions. If you accept that and not be too proud, that mine is of course represent the best of them all, and it contains the maximum of the core, it represents the maximum of the essence of the essential truth, then that is merely a claim. Because sarva dharma sambhavna, that is bringing about sambhavna, the common feelings towards each other, can only take place when we honestly permit ourselves to study world religions. That effort we have to make. But incidentally for us, it has been made simplified in the theosophical teachings, to which we shall revert very soon. Now, these points of agreement can be arrived at, as I just mentioned, by first defining what is religion, you see. There are various defining religions, dictionary ways or philosophical way, but from the very word, Latin word, ligere, that is, ligere means to bind. Now it is that force, that energy, that system of thought, which can bind people's mind together and hearts together. Then you can call that religion. There are other definitions also. It is that inspires man to satisfy his inner urge. Dr. Erich Fromm, one of the great psychoanalysts of those days, he saw and he came to the conclusion that human heart craves, has got an inward urge, and that it has got in it a sense of the religion inborn in him. He can go to his own words, you see. He says, religion is not an ethical norm, but an inward need and a spontaneous urge of our higher nature. Very few psychologists come to the conclusion of man having a higher nature. Usually it is the personal consciousness and at the lower level of the subconscious realm to which most psychiatrists or psychologists refer. But here is a person who was one of the humanistic philosophers, philosopher of the humanistic religion. He calls it religion of humanism. Being a philosopher, he comes across this. So, and then he says that if you fulfill the need and the urge of that human nature, then that individual becomes productive. What we call virtuous. Ordinarily, in the language of the religion, we call it a religious man. But he, being a psychologist, calls it a productive orientation. And therefore, he defines religion as the yearning. He says that religion, the need of the Jaya nature is religion of humanity. But then, do religions really satisfy that need? See, does it really satisfy that need of our higher nature? That religion is spontaneous, is natural to man. It is not something imposed on me, it is not something learned belief, which is of course there later on. But I'm talking about, we are talking about the urge, that inborn urge in human soul. That man feels empty without being religious. As someone says that there is no God, you will have to invent him. So much is that urge for something which is superior to, supreme towards us, that need to lean on that supreme, that man actually creates a God in his own image. So with this background, if you accept that this second object, if you really pursue, then it can be aided by understanding religion itself, as we just mentioned. Like everything else in the world, you can divide everything as spirit, soul and body. Whether in man you call it the spirit part of man, the soul part of the man and the visible form part of the man. But same is true with an abstract subject like religion. Because religion at its core is the soul of religion. And that spirit of religion, the very core, the very essence, if we can grasp that, that will satisfy our urge. That will satisfy our inward need to fulfill ourselves fully. So that self-fulfillment in an inward sense comes only when we realize this essential aspect of religion. Otherwise we are completely lost in the superfluities, into the dogmas and doctrines and rituals and all these formalities. In fact, that is the reason why people have turned away from religion now. It is said that churches are now getting empty. Even meetings of this kind are getting scarcer and scarcer. Why? Because people have lost interest in this, what may be called irrational teachings which go by the name of religion. So this religion, instead of binding, seems to be dividing men from men, dividing culture. There is a conflict of cultures, there are conflict of religions. Not only the conflict, as the socialist would say, conflict of the economic levels, conflict of class, but conflict of caste. This is a great curse, especially in our country. So this casteism, this fundamentalism, this sectarianism, this is something which has been dividing men instead of bringing together. So men really discussed, many, many young people have discussed it with the name of religion. He says, God is irrelevant to me. He has no place in my life. I don't see why I should have postulate of God in order to progress in my life. It is enough to know that I exist. So like that, so religion becomes some kind of an unsatisfactory hypothesis. And this division has led to be surprised. The other day I read in Reader's Digest that there are 30,000 sects and subsects of Christianity. During HPB's time there were 350, she mentioned somewhere. There were 350 during her lifetime. Now 30,000 all over the world. And why this division? Because each claiming a different colouring to it, a little shade added to it, a dogmatic view of perceptions. So in that sense people get disgusted, people turn away and become really religious. But then you don't throw away the baby with the bathtub, you must at least try and restore And that is the function of theosophy. We are trying to restore humanity back to its original religious aspiration. And that religious aspiration will come when we understand that this division of mind and time, you see, is not true religion. The true religion ought to bring people together, not only on a common platform, but a feeling of brotherhood. Even a very simple way, in Prophet Muhammad says, you see, somewhere, that he considers that the true religion, according to him, is that which brings about sonshood among the children of one God. That we are all children of one God, and that if we can bring about that feeling of being son together, children of one parent, then that is, that's as simple as that. Now that apart, so as we said, the religion has got its soul side and its form side. And it's a form which seems to express. The form, of course, need. That we do need a body to express our soul quality. So the form can be misused. So then instead of worshipping the real core, the soul of the religion, we worship the outward forms. And therefore we call it formalities. This is how whole superstructure of religion is built. The whole piers of religion superstructure, but the real base is totally lost sight of. And therefore, this universal religion, which has to be, it should be religion. If it is truly religion, then it should be religion applicable to all times at all. That's why it is called the truth. Truth is that which is universal. Truth which is that which is true for all times and all purposes. Which is self-evident. We don't require logic to explain that. And of course, which explains. It is that truth which explains, which satisfies both our mind and our heart. So the different expressions and different forms are on account of the time, place, people, that particular historical situation and so on. But at heart, at the core, if you go to the history of religions, you will come across the same teaching. Now if you go to one of the readings that is there in your hand, it is said, we'll read the first and the second. It is only by studying the various great religions and philosophies of humanity, by comparing them dispassionately and unbiased mind, that man can hope to arrive at truth. It is especially by finding out and noting the various points of agreement that we may achieve this result. That result is, as we said, this brotherhood of religion. This is by Madame Blavatsky. And then, this is the logical statement, that if the root of mankind is one, then there must be one truth at the core which finds expression in various religions. So this is a starting point. If we think that everything has begun at the highest level, at the supreme level, the whole universe has come from that supreme source, if we accept that, he said, no, if that root of mankind and the root of everything that exists, it is that one divine principle of life and light, out of which the whole universe has come into being, and so also the truth. And it is that truth which shall make us free. So we have to search for that truth at the very root, at the very source. Therefore, this truth is that satya, and that original source is called satya, satchit ananda, sat, there is existence itself. So out of that sat, out of that supreme existence come that satya, which expresses itself as truth. And that is the core of religion. So that in various religions we can find expression there, and you have to search for it. This is about burden of today's talk that we are trying to find out. And of course we'll have to go to a little bit of historical side to it. That most of the religions oriented at the three different levels. That is the era of the prophet messenger or prophet reformer. Then there is the era, there is a period of the apostles, who seems to be recording there. They were the contemporaries of the prophet, or they came a little later and they make recording of the expressions of the prophet's own words. And that forms the scripture of the world. And of course, later on, that is the era of an organized institution. So the era of a prophet reformer, the saviors, the messengers, then the era of the apostles, the later teachers who go out into the world to spread the word, and who are the recorders, faithful. So this faithful recording gets lost, diluted, colored, interpolated. Mischief has been made with that. So that is the period when an institution is built around an abstract structure. If you build a physical structure over an abstract thing, naturally it is, unless the foundation is proper, fruitful, it is bound to come. So institutions come and go. Religious creeds are coming and going. Therefore, in this last 18 million years, ever since the man has become a thinking man, religions have come and religions have gone. That's why Bhagavad Gita says that the mighty art gets lost. Why does it? Mighty art gets lost. Why does it get lost? It is because it passes through the minds, the prism of the man's mind. The white ray of light, when it passes through human consciousness, naturally it gets colored by the nature of human nature, by the nature of man. And man being triple, as I said, spirit, soul and body. And in his, and body means certain things which belong to the lower nature, naturally it gets colored. So ultimately, as we said, the truth gets diluted as it passes through the human prism, and that the root of the tree of knowledge gets lost. So therefore, there is a beautiful quotation here by Sri B. He says, no one can study, that's a quote really, no one can study ancient philosophies seriously, perceiving, without perceiving the striking similarities of conception between all, and it is shown that human religious thought, human religious thought was inspired by the same revelation, and men are nurtured under the protective shade of the same tree of knowledge. This tree of knowledge is an excellent imagery. We shall go through that imagery. You see, it is excellent because this is a very nice way of describing, as we just said, one way of describing it in terms of time. The era of the prophet, the era of the apostles, and the institutional church religions, which creates creeds around itself, which creates dogmas around itself, which builds authorities, which insists on its believing in that dogmas, and therefore loses spirit. So this tree of knowledge, as we said, has it should have its own seed to begin with. And the seed is at the abstract level, the absolute level. Those seeds are never visible. But the tree can be visible if you are a mystic. And that tree in the real sense, that Ashwatha tree as is described in the 15th chapter of the Gita, that it has got roots above and branches below. And that root, the religions will claim that our prophet is the root, because the religion seems to have started with that. But what we are able to see are not the roots but the trunk, which are of course the doctrines, at best the scriptures. And when the scriptures are available as they are extant now, you will find them that they are in the language of paradoxes, they are language of symbology, there are certain ciphers which need to be deciphered. And it requires real mystical mind to be able to understand real scriptures. One of the great translators of Zoroastrian literature, Dr. Eras Tarapurwala, a great philosopher, thinker, prophet, teacher, he said that he came across one little mantra, the one foundation mantra of Zoroastrianism called Aunavarya, Aunavar, which consists of only 12 words. But he came across 32 translations of one single mantra. which is the foundation mantra of Western religion. Just as Gayatri mantra could be considered as a great mantra, it is almost on a parallel line. 32 translations. And he says, I have to go into little mystical conditions of my consciousness to be able to give justice to the real translation. So you can imagine what must have happened to all the world scripture that has come down the time. One of the latest which has been preserved very well is the Quranic teaching, because it has not been tempered with as much as it is done with the other scriptures. So what happens? You require therefore the key. And the key can be easily furnished if you study, if you go to the essence of religion. Now how shall you go about doing it? The key to the mysteries are already supplied to us as yourself. For our students, this key is available. If you make a very sincere study of Isis Anvil and the sacred doctrine and much of the H.P. Madame Blavatsky's works, she had made it very simple. Like the function of a prophet, you see, if you go to the history of the prophet, his first job is to weed out the old things. That which is a superstructure added over the real core of the religion. In the time of Zarathustra, he belonged to that religion which was called Mazdaism or Mazdaism, Mazda Yasnidin, which is belief in that one of the Mazda, which had become so desecrated that it has come down to level of idol worships. Therefore he had to weed out and he has to do away with all the excrescences that has collected over the central idea. So that he did not start a new like Krishna. He gave a keynote ring, a keynote ring to the whole new Manvantara. Because Krishna was a fully awakened avatar. And therefore it was for him to start a keynote address. Which vibration has to ring down certain period of time? Again, that mighty art gets lost over a period of time. So this striking a keynote is one of the functions of a great teacher. But he strikes a minor keynote. And when he strikes it, appears to be something new. But it is not new, it is a new idiom, you might say, a new metaphor, a new way of expressing the same whole. It is couched in a language of the people. It is couched in a mystical language, a language of the mystics. And therefore, as you said, it requires to decipher that language. So therefore, the words of the prophet sometimes are paradoxical. They sometimes contradict one another. You can quote actually scriptures and contradict them. So, Mazdaism, that original teaching, gets lost over a period of time. And Zarathustra has to start almost all over again, and therefore you might call it a prophet founder. But it is the same revelation that he received, which all other prophets have received earlier to him. For there are apparently 13 Zarathustras before him. The historical Zarathustra of our time, who is the author of the Gatha. This is why we are talking about Zarathustra, because there is one example very near to us. That the author of the Gatha is the 13th, rather the 14th among the 13 in line. Just as Lord Buddha says that I belong to the same parampara. When his father asked that this doesn't belong to our race. But he says, I belong to another race. The race of Tathagata, that handed down from the one spiritual teacher to another, to another, to another. So that parampara of the great teachers, undying race that they are. So the same revelation comes to that great prophet. He actually withdraws, Zarathustra withdrew from the world for about 12 to 13 years and achieved a kind of inner transformation. Then he received an authority, a seal, to go out into the world to promulgate. So naturally, it appeared to be a new form of religion. But it nearly, as I said, the first function of his was to strive to remove the cobwebs, that which was accrescences overlaid over the original core Mazdaism, the belief in one abstract principle of life, and light which pervades the entire universe. But then, that has to function in a material world of its own. Therefore, it has to function through agencies. And therefore, Zarathustra has to postulate the idea of Amishaspintas and Yajatas, who are the great Pitris, the Agnishvata Pitris, who are there, who are functioning, who are the architects of this universe, and who are looking after the world's development, the universal manifestation. So, the present theosophical movement is again the same revival movement. It has to revive in the sense that revive that which is dying out, which is lost, has to be revived. Breathed fresh blood into it, breathed fresh air into it. And if we can catch hold of these original words of the Prophet, therefore it is best to go to the Gathas first before tampering with other yasnas. Because you will find that the core of the Western teaching can be easily available there. Similarly, it is best to go to Bhagavad Gita first before we can venture into Upanishads and other teaching, because that forms the very substratum, the basic teachings. If you are very well versed in that, with that foundation, you can start with further exploration. So we talk about the tree of knowledge, you see that. So the branches are the different modes of expressions, and therefore the need can be supplied by the study of underlying verities and the essential doctrines of the wisdom religion. And therefore, if we really pursue the second object, we will come across the underlying, not only underlying verities, the underlying truth, but you will find that there is one central core which is called wisdom religion. This wisdom religion is called Sanatan Dharma, Brahma Vidya, variously called. Various names are given. Bhagavad Gita calls it in a different fashion. It's called spiritual knowledge, Jnana Yoga. This exhaustless doctrine of yoga, he calls this imperishable, exhaustless doctrine of yoga. He says, I communicated at that very high level to Ishwaku, that soul, that very spiritual sun, self. From that it is passed on until it reached the solar kings, Raja Rishis. And being thus transmitted from one unto another, it was studied by the Raja Rishis until at length, in the course of time, those of the large period of time, the mighty art was lost. It is even the same exhaustless, secret, eternal doctrine of the mysteries. I have this day communicated unto thee, because thou art my devotee and my friend. So once again, he has to start all over again with Arjuna. And even Arjuna also forgot after some time. Because this has to be impressed upon the soul of mind. Do you think that in the Kurukshetra, Krishna and Arjuna dialogue took place, it takes about 45 minutes to read Bhagavad Gita, if you read rapidly. So the whole dialogue would require 45 minutes. And while the battling is raging, when the exchange of weapons are going on, you think such a dialogue is possible? This is the logical question. But it is possible to impress upon a soul's mind a concept, the root concept, which fructifies itself in its own way. So this seed that is implanted in Arjuna fructifies itself into this whole of Bhagavad Gita. This is one of the ways by which you can explain how 18 chapter dialogue has ever taken place between pupil and guru. So similarly, the dialogue between Zarathustra and Avramasda seems to have taken place at various stages. And it is described at first, in the beginning it talks about I am helpless and please guide me, and I require light and a plea for light and a plea for guidance. And then when he selected, he said, I am not sure whether I am really worthy of it. Then he is given an assurance and given a credential and a seal and so on. So like that, the whole dialogue seems to be a very lengthy thing. But what we need actually, therefore, in that case is to go back to this essential truth. And that requires a mystical consciousness. That is why it is called revelation. You see, William James, the contemporary HPB, the great psychologist, philosopher, professor, he gave a series of lectures and published a book, printed a book called The Varieties of Religious Experience. And in the religious experiences, he speaks about the mystics, right from the ordinary mediums to the highest mystic, like Guru Nanak and Sant Kabir. And even quote from Voice of the Silence. And he says that one essential thing that you can come across is that as these beings come out of that inner experience, they see the unity of one life. They see that one life throbbing through every single speck of matter. Even at a lesser level, Rabindranath Tagore puts it on record that once he went into a trance condition and he had a vision, and that influence lasted for only 4 days. And that 4 days he was able to see the same essence in all beings and creatures. This was one kind of a mystical experience of a man like Rabindranath. So then they all things, they find that in that mystical experience they find that unity of one life. This is the essence of one life. Unity of one life. We have missed this unity because we have divided ourselves into the diversities. Doctrine number one, doctrine number two, doctrine number three. Such as fundamental proposition number one, fundamental proposition of secret doctrine number two and number three. It is all right for the study purposes. When somebody asks Madam Lavatsky that am I right if I try to search for the one thread that runs through it all, one student asked, and he wrote what I feel about this study of secret doctrine, that if I can catch hold of that central thread which runs through the whole of secret doctrine, it is the spirit in man, the spirit, the divine spirit in the whole of universe. So we have to catch hold of that, the essential part of the world religion. That will be the starting point at least. So when we say about the tree of knowledge, we are lost into the branches and to the trees, which do contain, and then the weeds get overlaid. So as we said, the function of the teacher is therefore first to weed out those things, and then proposition, then give proposition of the true teachings of yourself. And now if we can go to the common truths of the world religion, the common denominator, which you can find in all world religions, in a very simple way they are called the articles of faith. The fundamental articles of faith of the all world religions, they are about 5, 6 or 7. And if you can enlarge upon them and see them in the light of theosophy and see the parallelism between the two, that is a way to study compared to religions. Now we can only relate them, this, the concept of the creator, number one, the concept of the one teacher, which is supposed to be the head of that teaching, then the concept of not only the creator, but the helpers, the angel and the archangels, and the whole pavilion under which the God is residing, which is hidden behind a pavilion, and that there is the kingdom of heaven. This is the one concept of the creator. And then all the rest of it, creation. And in that creation, the top of it stands, of course, the great prophet. And the great prophet calls himself, I am the law. The law, the truth and the way. So the prophet himself calls himself the law. Dharma itself. When Buddha was asked that what religion was followed, how am I going to follow you? He said, don't follow me, follow the law, follow dharma. Because if you follow dharma, you will follow me. If you surrender yourself to dharma, the law, that absolute fundamental law of the universe, then it is as good as worshipping Buddha. the ultimate essence. So, the second concept about is about the teachers of mankind. Then the third is about the justice. This is another concept found in all world religion. This is absolute necessary, which is considered as an article of faith. And now this justice, how it is expressed? That at the end of that life, either you go into heaven or hell. So the concept of heaven and hell is also built up by the institution of the world religions. Concept of heaven and hell is merely a concept, which is not a place or a location, but which is a state of mind or the state of consciousness in the afterlife states too. But then a whole superstructure of the description of the heaven world and these things is built up in the religious teachings. And then the way, the path and the goal. Then the way, as far as is concerned, you see, is described as salvation. Salvation by faith and salvation by works. Among the Christians, there is a division on that. Very soon after the departure of Jesus Christ, among the subsequent apostles, differences take place. Salvation by faith. And if you believe in that salvation by faith, that you put all your faith and to support that faith, to fortify that faith, what you require are rituals, practices, belief systems, and the whole, once again, superstructure of religious institutions. And even Lord Buddha in his lifetime rebelled against this structure, rebelled against this belief in this kind of believe in one faith, that if I believe in it, everything will be goody-goody. There is a divine grace. I just surrender myself to God and He will do the needful. I only have to just say, I will. There was one actually poem, it says that, why do you have to carry the burden on your own head? The boatman is carrying you across the river. The boatman is God, just put your burden on him and he will carry you across. That means you are not supposed to do anything but just sit quietly in a boat. Put down the whole burden on your head in that boat and you will be carried across if you have got faith. But the faith has got a deeper meaning in philosophy, and we won't go into that. But this, an actual rebellion took place, Saint Francis of Assisi. He rejected this idea. He said, man must work in the service of humanity. That work, that salvation only through works and living in this world and the service of mankind, that is the true way to the salvation. When Prophet Muhammad says, all creatures of Allah are His family. See the fundamental teaching. All creatures of Allah are His family. And He is the most beloved of Allah who tries to do most good to God's creatures. He is the most beloved of Allah, who does the most good to God's creatures. Let me say that, go to pray 5 times in a day, which later on he said, out of discipline. So that discipline, of course, has to be undertaken later on. But the core, we are talking about the core of religion, the truths in religion, the essential part is service of man. And the same Prophet, very simple way he puts it, a very universal truth. The best of man is he from whom good accrued to humanity. So the goodness, the good accruing to man, that which makes man happy, that which makes, lifts up the man's, that which serves humanity, it is that effort which forms the core of the religion. As simple as that. But talking about the divinity, Guru Nanak says it very beautifully. O foolish man, turn thy thought to one God in thy heart. This is an emphasis. That they don't go to the temples, don't go to the mosque, Monday masjids. Turn to the one God in thy heart. In each and every one there is eternal light. And then he says, no, this is the essence of Guru's teaching. That is the central teaching. That is the truth. That is the essence. One single statement, that this is that one divine light that is there within you, and that you need not search for it in the temples, churches, mosques, etc. That when Zarathustra came in presence of his, the great king, in order to convince him about the world religion, he is supposed to have brought a fire in his raw hand. And that was merely a symbolic that I am bringing light on this world, on this earth. And he wanted the king to see that light. And that light is something which scorcheth not, which burns not, because it is there within me. So that the concept of the fire, the concept of the light and the worship, and the reverence that you should show to that, which has been translated into fire worship. External way of propitiating fire, so that something that I like should be fulfilled. My own desires must be fulfilled if I worship before fire. So you can imagine desecration of a very sublime fruit. Of a fire, that same burning light, the same burning fire within the heart of all men. See, that eternal light that is burning there. Instead of reaching out to him, we are always looking out to lights outside. We light the fire, we light the lamp and all those. These rituals, they are symbolic. If you can remember that they are symbolic of a central core of the truth, that when I go to fire temple, I go in because I see there is a fire behind the visible fire. That I see the divinity, which is the source of all light. Because divinity is nothing else but all pervading light and life. And because it is all pervading, it is there in every single atom, and it is there in every single heart of human beings. If you can accept that, then naturally my dharma is to serve humanity. And to, if I worship before light, that if I come across every human being and see that within him is that light, that jewel, then I will respect him. So the real dignity of man consists not because he is a two-legged human being, not because he is just human being, though that also makes a difference because he is certainly above animal. But it is because it is in him is that central light which is shining, which is an undying thing. And therefore when I say Sahibji, Namaskar, that I nama before you, I am not bowing before that outer human being, but I am saluting the little fire that is within me. Now you can imagine the exercise. Instead of these ordinary salutations that we make, if we start saluting this way to one another, say they say Jai Ramji and all those words are used, of course, sometimes to remember Ram. But then when we say Namaskar, we must know that I am bowing before that man, not the outer man, but the inner man. Although he may be my servant, at least for the present. He has got a function of a servant for us. That doesn't mean that you have to put him on my head. But at the same time, I must respect him as a human being. So all the ethical teaching, therefore the way, we are talking about the way, and the goal. So that ultimate goal is that the man's yearning is to go back to his home. We have come far away from our homeland, from our parents, like the prodigal son, and taken a very long detour and got ourselves lost all the way. The only way is to turn back and to find our own home. But that urge is there. That's why the prodigal son, even when he became at the worst level, suddenly his memory was awakened and he remembered that, why am I? Where am I? What am I doing? Where is my home? Where is my true home? And then he started his journey homewards. And they were rejoicing when he returned home. So this returning is the return journey. That is why humanity is described as an emanation from divinity. That we are emanation, the rays from the one divinity on his return path thereto. That we are all returning back. So it is two-way traffic. That we have come down all the way and become concretized into this materiality, but not yet lost because the light is still there at the core of our being. and that it requires to unfold all that dirt and all the weeds that have been woven around religions, and our consciousness has to be uncovered. So the function of religion is to purify man's soul, the man's outer coverings, and to unfold him. To unfold means that which is folded in has to be unfolded, and the faculties and the great powers that are lying latent in him require to be unfolded. For that is the function of the world religion. So if you can grasp that central essence, we have understood. But then one last word, that theosophical movement of the ages has been always existed. The very word movement, that movement has always existed invisibly as an undercurrent. But from time to time it emerges as historical world religions. The last effort that was made in the year 1875 by Madame Blavatsky is also in the same direction, to bring about the unfoldment of the pure original Theosophia, which is given out in one of our, in the reading which is given out, the description which is given of world religion. That core world religion is something which is there at the very beginning, which will always exist and which will ever exist, but which we have to search for. And that the effort of the movement is to bring about universal brotherhood of humanity, universal brotherhood of the world religions, and to find the essential truths in the heart of man. And therefore allow him to unfold himself at his best. That is the third object. That unfoldment can take place with the help of the true religion, the religion of knowledge. So you may say Theosophy is a religion of knowledge. That it is a synthesis of philosophy, religion and science. Synthesis, no compartmentalization, an essential synthesis. So when you study religion, you have to study from the point of view of philosophy, study from the point of view of the religious feeling, and also from the point of view of rational nature. So the religion must explain, it must satisfy our mind as well as our heart. And religion that fails to explain and fails to satisfy our logical mind has got something wrong somewhere. Question it, challenge it, until our heart is satisfied. With that we can end. We'd like to end with the last quotation from Anugita. This is what happens in that mystical experience. With numerous coherent symbols, the same knowledge is expressed, is rehearsed in different religions. All people, whatever their caste, station and a way of life, who are inwardly at peace, that means all seekers who are inwardly at peace, attain to the same truth as rivers going into the sea. So we and all can turn, if we can find inward peace within us. But to find that inward peace, the whole exercise of the second object has to take place. You have got about 1.5 minutes, 2 minutes to answer your questions.
So I have a question.
Ah, yes, yes, quick.
Sir, you seem to be Christian, that there are 3,000 sects.
30,000.
So why is the intolerance between people? They don't live by the scriptures, but they die for the scriptures. Why is the intolerance and violence?
But that is the nature of human mind. The human mind wants to concretize things. When you talk in that abstraction, the present talk that we have given, I think it will go above the head of most of the person if you are not really a thinker. If you are not a thinker, it will go above your head. You have to apply your mind. That is, people do not apply their mind to that teaching. You ask a Christian, have you read a Bible? We have asked many of our Hindu friends in our college days, whether they have read Bhagavad Gita. I said, well, I am not a Hindu by birth, but that I have read Bhagavad Gita, I am studying it at present in the college years. I told my college colleagues, no, I am just giving personal example, so I'm sorry to say that. But this is what has happened. People don't even go to their own religion, study their own scriptures. In fact, at one time, they were forbidden to study. Am I right? you were forbidden to study scriptures of your own. Only the interpreter should be the church and the church authorities. You have to go to the priest and ask some question on it. You can't study by yourself. Of course, now in the Dhamma for last 100, 200 years, we have been liberated. Now anybody can go and study any scripture with reverence. But why you are answered that? That is a human nature, that we want easy. We are lazy mind. We don't want to think for ourselves. And it's only because of the laziness, these cobwebs gathered into our minds, and therefore a lot of weeds have gathered over actual pure world religion. The great religions of the world are dying out one by one. So that man has never been without religion. You can imagine 18 million years man has been thinking. His mind has been impressed upon by that great world religion. That Sanatan Dharma was impressed upon him. And yet, over a period of time, it gets lost again and again. And again effort had to be made to revive that same teaching. So there is nothing great about that. Human beings are like that. Thank you, class.